Hello, everybody. It's Friday, August 22nd, and this is your Chapo. Coming in a day late, but I was in Dallas. Just want to thank the good folks over at Patreon for flying me out to Dallas for the Podcast Movement Convention. Well, I say they flew me out for the convention. They flew me out to have sex with me, but I appreciate it nonetheless. So coming in a day late, here is your Chapo. And joining us, Felix and I, on today's episode is our old pal, Brian Quimby. Actually, our oldest pal. Brian, welcome back to the show.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Brian of the Guys Podcast. All right. So just to open today's episode, I thought I would talk about a very important story, a story that is roiling the nation right now. And unfortunately, guys, I don't know if I have to break this news to you, but Cracker Barrel has fallen. That's right. It's gone woke. Cracker Barrel has currently undergone a corporate rebrand, changing their iconic Cracker Barrel logo and finally getting rid of that disgusting racial slur. Guys, I know this is tough right now, but I think our audience, our listeners would like to hear
from you.
Look,
if you are animated by this, you shouldn't just kill yourself. You should probably kill any kids you have. I mean, let's be honest. Like, I'm used to seeing, like, you know, stupid pitch culture war stuff over, you know, the jeans commercial or whatever. But this is just fucking nothing. This is nothing. This reminds me of when, like, people who are in solitary confinement for 40 years see, like, a mouse that's vaguely shaped like a tit. And they're like, oh, I can jack off to that for 4 days. This is so, if this inspired like any rise in temperature or heart rate or anything, wipe out your kids, kill your grandkids. There's something wrong with you.
It's crazy that it's a logo. Like, not even that they went woke, really. It's that they just changed
Brian,
the fucking
Brian,
logo.
They went woke. They went woke, okay?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're going by the idea that the guy on the Cracker Barrel sign is a cracker, then it's gone kind of woke. We got rid of all the crackers, I guess. It's an ethnic cleansing of crackers.
This, just hearing anything about this, it gives me the same feeling as when we watched the Warcraft movie, where it just threw me into a depression for days just thinking about this. I mean, if I even knew someone who is like, I'm really mad about this, I would kill everyone I knew.
I know someone that is, I guarantee, mad about this. Like, my in-laws, first of all, impulse bought a chair at Cracker Barrel years ago. Like, went to eat there and came home with a chair. So I guarantee that they are extremely mad about this. But I looked it up and I could not, like, it's so weird. You can't even kind of figure out what they're mad at. Like,
okay, like they've rebranded the Cracker Barrel corporate logo, and I think it's because they're seeking to, like, sort of do that kind of sort of millennial minimalism thing, mm-hmm. where they're taking away the classic character Uncle Herschel or whatever his name is, the classic cracker on the Cracker Barrel logo, and they're going to try to make the restaurants look a little bit more like, you know, Starbucks and not like, you know, the old style food shack down at the old general store where you get hardtack and corn pone and, you know, goy slop. They're taking away the goy slop from the goys, and it's the corporate minimalism, I think, that is people are inferring as being woke.
Yeah, I mean, all the new logos look bad, mm-hmm. sure, but these people all eat at Panera, and it's the same thing.
That's what it's going to end up being, right?
Yeah.
It's going to end up being a Panera that has, like, maybe... Because it's still going to be... It's still got to look like with the wood slats and stuff like that. I can mm-hmm. guarantee they're not changing most of that. But if they do start selling stuff... Like, if they start selling woke stuff in the store, that'll be awesome. Like, that, because these guys, they're not doing, there's not much of a difference.
The Bud Light thing was like, oh, like, here's a trans person who's like, yeah, I drink Bud Light. It's cool for trans people to drink Bud Light. This is just, they're licking the bag here for culture war outrage. Here.
Well, I was reading the Fox News story about
this. This is the only story on Fox right now, by the way.
And there's a line in it that's crazy. So they're putting people's tweets on there. And there is one tweet in the article that says, they literally just ruined the entire thing, change it back. And I found that to be the most psychotic post I've ever I've seen people get mad about this stuff, about weird stuff all the time, but there's always something in it that I can kind of figure out.
Yeah.
You know, there's always like with Aunt Jemima. Okay. They're mad because they want the racist syrup. That's like all it is. This, I can't even get into that with them, you know?
It's like, yeah, like the sign, it's just like fully postmodernist, like culture war. It's like, There is now no connection between sign and signifier. It's just like they changed the font on Cracker Barrel, and it's just like, yep, race war is coming. They're coming after the whites.
I do think it's because like Cracker Barrel had a few racist like accusations in the past, and they feel like they're losing another one of their institutions, I guess.
Well, Felix, I don't know if you remember this, but like the one time that I've ever ate at a Cracker Barrel or been inside a Cracker Barrel, this was like when we were on tour, and like every Cracker Barrel, they have like a sort of like corporate mission statement at the front of the restaurant, which is designed to sort of let you know, like, hey, like, yeah, we were the racist restaurant in the past, but like, you know, anyone's free to eat at Cracker Barrel. Well, this is a welcoming environment. If you want some food and a good family atmosphere. But that being said, I do remember the food at Cracker Barrel being a terrible slop.
Yeah, no, it's horrible. It is like, you know, like country fried steak. The stuff they eat in Indiana.
The feed here. I'm just in the South.
I'm just going to randomly start firing out my window if we keep talking about this.
I just can't think. This is just nothing. I mean, licking the bag is right. There is no value to events from this.
It's right. Just they have to make people mad all the time. There has to be a steady stream of things that make people mad. And sometimes you just don't have anything. We all podcast. Some weeks you don't have anything. You know what I mean? And Fox News was like, what the fuck am I supposed to do? Plus, they've won everything.
Yeah, I know.
So what are they going to do? They need to conquer something else. And now it's minimalism at Cracker Barrel.
Well, my apologies to anyone currently walking by Felix's apartment. But I did like this aspect of the story where it says this is from this is about like a Florida gubernatorial candidate, Byron Donalds. So it says, somewhere in Tallahassee at the turn of the millennia, a young Byron Donalds stood in the parking lot of his local Cracker Barrel, then his place of employment, and contemplated the man atop the wooden whimsy pancake palace. It was that moment, staring into the golden brown face helming the performatively old-timey interstate eatery, that a future congressman decided to give himself to Christ.
All right, slow down, Robert Caro. Oh, my God.
That is almost sad. That makes you sad, is that a guy was really
This was
inspired.
His road to Damascus moment, was in a Cracker Barrel parking lot.
Yeah, that is, these people are so empty. Like it's just everything in them is, it's just, oh, please give me the next thing that I can be mad at. And I'll make up a origin story. It's like an origin story, like Batman. He's like, I'm a senator now, but his parents didn't get killed. He was just at a Cracker Barrel. He worked at a Cracker Barrel, which I guarantee he fucking hated.
Yeah, hated every second of it.
I've never thought of Cracker Barrel as anything more than a place where, you know, those families that have like two identical fat sons and they both have like the fat child fade. where they're so
where it looks like their eyes are permanently closed.
Yeah. I always thought it was weird when like those fat white families. Like those fat white families, like they give their kid a fade. It's like, where are you going for that? You know, where are you going in like Nathan Bedford Forestville, Kentucky to get a white guy fade? Are you traveling to New York to go to the
traveling
Dominican
to Chicago
barber?
To see the nude barber?
Oh yeah, yeah. There's nothing sexual about it. We just like him. But you go there if you have one of those families and they're rewarding you for like, you know, learning how to read in 10th grade.
Yeah, every idiot, every guy that ended up being a moron now when I was growing up had Cracker Barrel stuff all over their house. Like,
because, well, like, yeah, it's a restaurant and a store.
Yeah. Too.
Like, there's a lot of merchandise that you sell. It says
the golf tee game. It's like a triangle.
And I play. Yeah.
Yeah. That's like their big thing there.
So it says, this may not be exactly how it happened, but Donald's came forward with the story of religious epiphany in a Cracker Barrel parking lot amid MAGA outrage over the chain's decision to change its logo, removing the image of Uncle Herschel and his barrel. I think the new logo should be Uncle Herschel wearing a barrel, you know, sort of solidarity with Americans about inflation and the price of everything. Felix, though, just one more thing here. And again, sorry to anyone currently walking by Felix's window, but there's another fan of Cracker Barrel that I thought you'd be interested in. Right-wing actor James Woods posted on the Cross Country Drives, Cracker Barrel was the only place I'd ever stop. No mob fights, no a fun, corny atmosphere, and delicious food when you're hungry and tired. I'll never step foot in one again.
Yeah, right, James. Yeah, right. You did, okay, like, you ever went to a Cracker Barrel for anything except for, like, a seventh grade spelling bee where you offered free transportation to and from? Come on, like, does anyone believe that James Woods was eating at fucking Cracker Barrel?
On his cross-country drives for some reason, like, where he was, like, he doesn't have that kind of, he's not a truck driver.
Yeah, what were you driving across country for?
We're constantly driving
I have to do an episode of Family Guy, and I also have to deliver 47 pallets of Diet RC. I'll just drive there.
One last thing about the Cracker Barrel rebrand. I saw that there was some good posting about it. Hillsdale College posted a photo of the new Cracker Barrel logo next to a photo of a statue of George Washington splashed with red paint and with the title, Same Energy. Cracker Barrel is a beloved cultural icon tied to the lifestyle and memories of truth-seeking Americans. To which sort of anti-woke activist Christopher Rufo replied, I wouldn't go that far. It's a chain restaurant. And I bring this up because that was a mere few hours before he posted this. This is Christopher Rufo again. All right. I'm hearing chatter from behind the scenes about the Cracker Barrel campaign, and on second thought, we must break the barrel. It's not about this particular restaurant chain, who cares, but about creating massive pressure against companies that are considering any move that might appear to be wokeification. The implicit promise, go woke, watch your stock price drop 20%, which is exactly what was happening now. I was wrong. The barrel must be broken. I mean, like, is this what happens when you
win?
I
really like that movie by Tariq Nasheed, Barrel Breaking.
Barrel Breaking? The barrel has been broken.
They're going to change the logo to have Theo Vaughn on it eventually. Replace the old guy. They love him, you know.
I had one thought on this, which ties into one of my other favorite trends of Trump 2 era, which is his redesign of the Oval Office.
Oh, yeah.
That it seems like one of the most unified demands of the MAGA movement at this time is goofy shit on the wall.
Yeah.
Like a taxidermied alligator's head or something like
yes.
that.
Yes.
Yeah. Hey, let's have a Uncle Herschel statue outside the White House, right outside 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. In fact, let's open a Cracker Barrel in the White House.
That's going to happen. There will be Trump standing in front of an Uncle Herschel sign. It's going to happen.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if he would branch out from his preferred McDonald's, but they have yet to go woke.
Hey, Farva. What's the name of that restaurant you like with all the goofy shit on the walls and the mozzarella sticks?
You mean Shenanigans?
Oh!
You're talking about Shenanigans, right?
Put those away!
Moving on to another story, another sort of junk food related story. This is news out of New York City recently. Eric Adams' campaign has been bribing people by putting cash in potato chip bags. They've been just handing out bags of potato chips with $100 bills in them. This is from the New York Times. A close advisor to Mayor Eric Adams was suspended from his reelection campaign on Wednesday after giving a journalist cash tucked inside a potato chip bag. The advisor, Winnie Greco, who was the mayor's former director of Asian affairs at City Hall and one of his best fundraisers, has returned to the campaign trail to volunteer during Mr. Adams' run for a second term. She had been at the center of a controversy after the FBI raided her homes last year as part of a federal investigation into possible Chinese government interference in the 2021 mayor's race. Ms. Greco's lawyer, Stephen Brill, said that it is common in Chinese culture to give cash to reporters in a gesture of friendship and gratitude. I grant you this looks odd, Mr. Brill said, but I assure you that Winnie's intent was purely innocent.
This woman's awesome. Apparently, she got she was living for 8 months in this weird hotel that was only supposed to be used for like convicts reentering society. Do you remember? This was like Adams scandal.
Yeah.
It was. I liked it because it was like it was like the type of municipal corruption like the Sons of Anarchy would be involved.
That's what I'm thinking. Like, I am just like, I respect putting $100 in a potato chip bag more than like funding it through a dark money pack. You know what I mean? It's like, if I found out that, I mean, I kind of am pissed off that other guys aren't trying. You know, like guys on our side.
I mean, this is a weird story, though, because it initially seems like she was aware that she was giving like a bag of chips with cash in it to a reporter, because she gave the bag of chips to them. They went, hey, you gave me some Frito-Lays with like $300 in it. That's the other thing. It's not like a big amount of money.
It's very small.
Money.
Yeah.
And then she, like, by the time she went to pick him up, she was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm going to kill myself today if you tell anyone about this. My favorite thing she said, I just wanted to make one good friend.
Yeah. It says here, the reporter.
Something Frankenstein says. It's so sad.
The reporter who was given the cash.
Did she know she was a reporter? Did she think like it was, she was doing a handoff to like Eric Adams, coordinator of like Pacific Islander affairs? It's so confusing.
Yeah, Felix, you gave a pretty good summary of it, but it says here, the reporter who was given the cash, Katie Honan, told the New York Times that Ms. Greco had texted her at the Harlem rally and asked to meet across the street next to a TD Bank. This is like meeting a dealer. It says, Ms. Honan, who has said she thought she was going to get information from Ms. Greco about the expected indictments, said they walked together into a Whole Foods store. There, Ms. Greco soon handed Honan the bag of chips, which the reporter said she did not want to accept. She tried unsuccessfully to return it. Like, at that point, she just thought she was being handed garbage by the
Why are you giving me chips?
It says, after the two parted, Ms. Honan opened the bag at her subway stop and discovered a red envelope stuffed with cash. I initially hoped it was a note, a tip, and then I looked into it and I go, oh my God, it's money, said Ms. Honan, who instantly called Ms. Greco to try to return at least one $100 bill and several $20 bills that she found inside the envelope. Ms. Greco told her that she had left the area and laughed about it. The publication said in its story that it had asked Ms. Greco about her motivation for giving the money to Ms. Honan and said that Ms. Greco replied that it was cultural and repeatedly apologized. Can we forget about this? She said, please don't do in the news. Please don't do in the news. Nothing about me.
It's incredible. Yeah. It is so funny to imagine the exchange of like, here's an open bag of chips, and then I don't really want an open bag of chips. And it's like, no, seriously, you want this open bag of chips. I need you to take it. It's cultural.
I mean, I realize like, if it is a Chinese cultural thing to just hand people envelopes of money, then I think I need more Chinese friends.
Yeah, I love that.
Well, I think we're missing out on this here in America, you know? Like, I did like some of the coverage of this. This is from The City, who was the reporter who got handed the money. It says, according to The City, Greco asked a campaign volunteer to help her remodel her Bronx home and promised him a job at City Hall. When asked about these findings, the mayor deflected and downplayed his relationship to Greco, saying he hadn't spoke to her about the allegations. Quote, when I see her, I say, ni hao. You know, that's hello, he told the press. And I did. And by the way, like an interesting addendum to this story is that, like, okay, it was the city, New York, that broke this story, and it was their reporter. now that this story is out there, the New York Times has come out today with a story about how back in July, their reporters saw money getting handed out to like journalists, or just they saw envelopes of money exchanging hands at an Eric Adams campaign event back in July. And now they're posting this story now, which is a bit conspicuous. And I do want to read from that New York Times article about this. It says, few New York City politicians have had a tighter bond with the Chinese American community than Mayor Eric Adams. This week, a new layer to the relationship emerged. Red envelopes filled with cash. The news that an advisor to Mr. Adams, Winnie Greco, had attempted to pay a reporter from an online news outlet, The City, stood out as a bold departure from political norms. I love that. A bold departure from political norms. I mean, I think this is like, no, this is a return to tradition, not a bold departure.
Yeah, this is what I prefer over like what is actually happening. It's like just handing people money is that's the respectful way to bribe somebody.
Yeah. And then putting it in a potato chip bag as well is also considerate to the person you're bribing. Because, you know, like it looks less conspicuous than just being handed a red envelope with like a dollar sign drawn on it. But also there still could be some chips left in the bag. You know, could have a little treat, a few crumbs of some Sun Chips or whatever.
It's so strange to think that's like, oh, this will look really normal. We're handing people empty bags or bags of chips that are open. Like, even just that the New York Times didn't, like, they're pretending like they didn't see it, but they saw it happening and they didn't say, like, oh, why are they handing out trash at this rally, you know?
it's an anti-littering event.
Yeah.
But I just think it's funny that the Times is like, now that this story is broken, they're like, oh, yeah, we saw him bribing people a couple months ago. But unfortunately, we couldn't get to that story because we were too busy collaborating with neo-Nazis about Mamdani's college application. They're like, yeah, we were working on a blockbuster story about Mamdani's SAT scores, but we just didn't have time for the open bribery happening at an Eric Adams event. And like, I don't know, like the fact that there's like sort of an ethnic angle to this is funny to me as well. That like, yes. It's just, you have to understand, it's just a cultural thing.
They love and it over there.
Yeah. So, like I said, if there are any Chinese people who'd like to be friends with Chapo Trap House, I think you know what you need to do.
$300 in an envelope, just even not handing out envelopes, like, because that's what you see in old mafia movies and stuff like that. And you know that they were like sort of concerned, like, we don't want it to look like we're passing envelopes because that's just a movie thing. So they had to figure out how to send it, and they picked bags of chips. There's got to be 100 different better things to hand people money in than that.
The thing about China is that it's an ancient culture, and it's very mysterious and inscrutable. And oftentimes, money can be given as a sign of friendship and respect. You just give your friend money.
Yes, reminds me of how you would talk about China when I was like a kid. They would be anything that was like, I remember freeze tag was where one guy was it and he ran around and froze people, and Chinese freeze tag was where everybody's it and one guy has to get away from them.
Well, then, yeah. Then you give him $100 if he gets away.
Yeah.
So, I mean, respect to Eric Adams for, you know, like I said, like departing from traditional political norms, sure. But like, that's just modern political norms. I just love that he is running like, just the most open penny ante fucking bribery and corruption. Yeah. It's like, this goes back to Boss Tweed, you know? Like, this is the way New York City should be run.
When I started doing the other podcast and I don't like cover politics on Guys, the one thing that I will read every time is an Eric Adams story. Like, 100% of the time I will read this guy because he is always funny. Like, he's one of my favorite guys. Now people are gonna be like, like when I said I like Trump on Doughboys.
Oh no.
I was joking.
Well, you don't have to vote for him, you know. No. But, look, he knows how to say hello in Chinese. That's Ni Hao, by the way. I do want to shift to one of the other New York City mayoral candidates, and that is Andrew Cuomo. And this is a story back from 2021 that was caught my attention again this week. And it relates to a book written by one of his former press secretaries. And she wrote a book called Penis Politics. This is by an ex-aide to Andrew Cuomo, Karen Hinton. And the New York Post covered this back in 2021, but there is some choice details about the former governor and current mayoral candidate. It says here, Hinton, who has previously accused an aroused Cuomo of inappropriately hugging her in a hotel room, said the ex-governor had no problem joking about AIDS when laughing over the infamous cigar incident between President Bill Clinton and White House intern Monica Lewinsky in 1998. She said Clinton had once given the cigar-chomping Cuomo a box of illegal, expensive Cuban smokes, along with a note that said, "Don't ask, don't tell," a nod to the president's policy regarding gays in the military. Hinton, Cuomo's press secretary when he ran Clinton's Department of Housing and Urban Development in 1997, said her boss laughed about it in front of her and other staffers when news of the president's cigar sex surfaced. Waving around one of the cigars, Cuomo joked, "At least you can't catch AIDS that way," she writes, adding that there was an uncomfortable silence from the staffers after her boss said that. Now, that's like a hack joke, but I wouldn't say that that's not something too beyond the pale. However,
I think of Trump as like the shock jock president, but this article actually, like, Cuomo was the Opie and Anthony governor.
The Trump Stern,
he's making gay, like, AIDS jokes, which was like a key part of like the draw of Opie and Anthony in 1999 and stuff.
Says here, Cuomo was summoned to the White House along with other aides to advise Clinton on the sex scandal, Hinton said. After the powwow, Cuomo told then-Energy Secretary Bill Richardson, "I think we can probably defend oral sex," the book says, "but I have to draw the line," here he paused for effect, "at presidential ass-fucking," Hinton writes, allegedly quoting Cuomo. She said Cuomo recounted the story to her and other staffers afterwards. Cuomo also opined like a poet about crude sex to what Hinton calls the boy brigade of male staffers when he was at HUD, while marveling at two Kennedy brothers allegedly having sex with the same woman, she writes. A male Cuomo underling told her that their boss was smoking cigars on the roof of HUD when he told the Kennedy tale. "The two of them," marveled Andrew, "are fucking the same woman. She likes to get fucked in the ass, and some days she goes from one Kennedy to the other to get it twice in one day," the tome quotes him as saying. Andrew leaned back and took a puff of the cigar, contemplative. "You know, when you have anal sex with a woman, you own her soul," he said.
What?
That is like one of the wildest things I've ever
heard. That is something out of like Blue Velvet.
Yes. My God.
Picturing Andrew Cuomo like telling that joke in the meeting and then coming back to his staff and being like, "So I says to Bill Clinton," like recounting these jokes is insane to me.
Yeah. Didn't get enough of a pop the first time.
Yeah. It's like, come back and tell his staff, and his staff has to laugh, you know?
Cuomo married Carrie Kennedy, the daughter of Robert F. Kennedy, in 1990. The couple divorced in 2005. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. adamantly denied the story to the Post on Tuesday. "That is not true," he said. "I've never heard of such a thing. I don't know Karen Hinton, and I don't think Andrew would ever tell a story like that." I mean, this is all alleged here, but like, I believe that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and his brother were deucing the same woman. Absolutely. And you know what, Felix? When I was reading this story, I thought about our screenplay about the Cuomos, where like you in the guise of fiction, we made a big plot point of that story that Andrew and Chris Cuomo were deucing the same woman in a deucing chamber in the Albany governor's mansion. Come on, like, it's on his mind, right? Like, it's in there. He's thinking about it. He's thinking about having sex with this with one woman and his brother.
Do you think after this story that RFK like went to like a team of researchers at like the World Health Organization was like, "Quick, find out if having anal sex with a woman owns her soul. I might have a lot of slaves, but I'm not sure. Can you find that out for me?"
Standing on stage at like standing up there defunding some kind of a vaccine and then also saying like, "I think you should be careful with anal sex because you don't want to give your soul away."
Well, you know, unless you are trying to gift your soul to someone. Yeah.
I mean, it's a marriage thing.
Yeah.
Let your spouse own your soul.
But But no, I definitely believe that. I mean, I think probably every generation of Kennedy's deuces.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
I think whose kid is Jack Schlossberg?
I think that is JFK Jr.'s kid.
Oh, yeah, he's probably in charge of all the deucing.
update the spreadsheet on how many women are currently enslaved in the afterlife to the Kennedys for having anal sex with them even once.
I think he says I have to draw the line.
Why the ass fucking thing? It's so, like, this is so... Because it's one thing to make a joke about anal sex, but the whole thing about how you own a woman's soul if you have anal sex with her, like, this is like something the Zodiac Killer would say.
Right.
Does it apply to men who have anal sex with one another? Like, do gay guys own each other's soul if you're a top? Like, do you own your bottom soul? Or do they just say they're not concerned with that?
Yeah, they just don't even. I mean, like, it's weird to think about. Because they're framing this as something that happened in 1997, but they're talking like this now, you know, like it's not like they have matured a lot. I am sure that there's been ass fucking talk at every political. I think Cuomo's probably still doing this, you know, he just has a tighter circle. I mean, these guys get to surround themselves like Elon Musk. They get to surround themselves with people who are like, dude, you are so funny. Like, that's their whole life. It has to be the best thing in the world.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking of, like, you know, because Cuomo is trying to do, like, for the general, he's trying to rebrand as, like, a personable person who cares about voters or has any respect for them. And he's trying to do these, like, Mamdani, like, viral video man on the street things. So I'm just imagining him approaching people on the street and asking how many times they've been fucked in the ass in the last week. and what can the mayor of New York do? You know, the mayor of New York, we're gonna appoint an ass fucking czar to sort of liberate the people currently enslaved by bottoming for their partner, and we're gonna move them into sort of a system of indentured servitude caused by ass fucking. We're gonna give them a stipend from the government.
Zoran is he grew up with a silver spoon, and he inherited all the women that his grandfather fucked in the ass when he turned 20. Our dad, the governor, he said that, like, he didn't care, like, if he was governor, we had to go out and we had to get our own slaves.
yeah exactly. Zoran's parent, every hole Zoran's ever plugged, his parents got him for him, whereas Chris and Andrew, they were grinding every day out there.
You know how it goes on with that culture. It was all arranged anal slave taking.
They're just going to have a race.
I went up the old-fashioned way. I would go out into a disco every night with my brother Chris. We would deuce any number of young ladies who went to Fordham. And there are slaves now.
That's how they're going to win with women in the general election.
You know, I understand he's running behind in the polls right now. And, like, you know, but he's still... he's second to Zoran. I mean, Zoran's leading by double digits. But Cuomo's still in the race. And I think there's a good chance that, like, 95% of the people that are going to vote for him in the primary have been ass-fucked by him at one time and are doing it as terms of their enslavement. So I think Cuomo's really got to – he's got to hit the streets, and he's got to start filling some assholes. He's got to close that gap. Fill that gap, if you will.
This is what any political expert will tell you about a general election campaign in New York. It's all about who can mobilize the most slaves. You have to kind of, you know, if people remember the scene where Aragorn from Lord of the Rings, where he gets all those guys that his dad fucked, who are ghosts now, to help them, that's kind of what he's got to do.
I am Isildur Zare. Fight for me. And I will hold your oaths fulfilled.
Zoran and, like, the sort of the new millennial DSA contingent, they're wasting their time eating pussy. You're not going to enslave anyone that way. Even no woman has ever been enslaved by getting her pussy eaten out. It's only
ass eating, though. You know, like,
nope, that doesn't count.
Something.
That doesn't count. Doesn't count.
It's the ass eater. I guess if you
the ass eater is being enslaved. Yeah,
yeah, you're their slave. Don't get around the ass. It's definitely a portal to slavery.
that is the road to serfdom.
Oh my God. What a fucking creep. And it's like, I don't know. I mean, it's just like, it speaks to the way that these guys think about sex, which is like, I guess it's a cliche, but I don't think they're actually getting off on the sex part of it. I think they just get off on like degrading and having power over a woman. And they think like fucking someone in the ass is like the most degrading or dominant way that you can like penetrate someone else's body. So they're like, yep, that's the top. That's my favorite hole because I own the person after I nut.
Yeah, it's also, I mean, this it's kind of a similar thing to Trump where it's like they're not excited over just having sex in and of itself. It's just, oh, I can't wait to tell everyone who works for me about this.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think Trump has ever had anal sex with anyone?
No.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I would say no.
I would say yes at least once. I think by accident.
Yeah, possibly.
he missed. I think he would try it like once during the early 80s, just because he heard that it was incredibly painful. And like,
he heard Roy Cohn talking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if we could find, I think there is a good chance for Trump above any other president to find out if he's ever claimed to have anal sex, because he went on all those fucking radio shows.
Yeah, yeah.
No, Howard Stern asked him if he had anal sex. There's just, that's all, that was like his main question in like the late 90s. Like, do you do anal? So I'm guessing that answer is out there.
If there are any intrepid journalists or Chinese people that want to get on that case, now is your opportunity. Well, moving on to another story of absolutely disgusting, dirty talk and sex-related hijinks. I do want to talk about this story. This is from last week, but basically this is about transcripts of a deposition that has been made public regarding a friend of the show, Laura Loomer, and her lawsuit against HBO and Real Time with Bill Maher. And it contains some of the funniest actual court transcripts, I think, ever that actually had to be reported by a stenographer. This is from Will Sommer writing at the Bulwark. It says, Laura Loomer has been hyperactive during the second Trump administration, claiming more scalps than any of the journalists or watchdog groups covering the administration. But it's not clear if this is the life that she wants to lead. The question that has perplexed and obsessed the Loomerati, of which I am a member, is what exactly is her long-term goal? A deposition in her lawsuit against HBO late-night host Bill Maher offers one of the clearest answers to date. Loomer sees a future in Trump world involving a White House job, and then from there, the sort of cushy foundation seats, book deals, and cable news gigs that past White House officials have enjoyed. Loomer sued Maher and HBO in October over a broadcast in which Maher said Loomer might be sleeping with Trump. I wrote last week about how the discovery in that case could yield some interesting revelations about the sources of Loomer's income and her contacts at the White House. And indeed, Loomer's deposition in the lawsuit does offer some juicy insight into her motivations. Going on here, it says several pages of the deposition are taken up by Loomer's September 2024 claim that her arch enemy, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, has Arby's in her pants. Given that Loomer's tweet also references Green's alleged affair with a man who once dressed up as a Street Fighter character, it doesn't say which Street Fighter character, though, it's clear that Loomer is making a pejorative reference, popular on the right, to the anatomy of a promiscuous woman. But in the deposition, Loomer apparently couldn't admit that was her reference point. Instead, she pretended she meant Green actually puts Arby's roast beef sandwiches in her pants. Here's just a small portion of the roast beef exchange. This is Bulger, the attorney who is questioning her. It says, so what is your basis for saying she had Arby's in her pants? Loomer, because I know she likes to eat Arby's. Bulger, and she likes to put it in her pants. You know that? Loomer, yeah. She puts Arby's in her pants. Yeah, she does. Okay, if I ask Marjorie Taylor Greene, she would tell you that she puts Arby's in her pants. It's my best belief that she would tell you that. Yes. Okay. Are you making a derogatory comment about her sex life by talking about Arby's in her pants? No, I'm talking about Arby's, the sandwiches. I'm talking about Arby's. I'm a very direct person. If I was making a derogatory comment, I would have said it.
I think I need to see more like people having to explain their jokes in court. Like that is fucking nuts. Like, cause she's like, has to think on her feet. And it's like, everybody knows what roast beef in your pants is. It's like the oldest joke in the book. And she has to say, no, I mean Arby's. Actually.
Yeah. Okay. So like further in the business, so Bulger says, can you explain to me what it means to say that, that the Arby's are in her pants? Larry Klayman, Laura Loomer's attorney. Objection, relevancy, Bulger. And by the way, like this is a deposition, not a trial. So like, you know, your defense attorney can object, but like no judge. It's just like you can ask anything in a deposition. So Bulger says, answer the question. Loomer, Arby's sells roast beef. Right. Can you tell me why you were talking about the Arby's in her pants? Well, it's just an expression. What is the expression trying to convey? It conveys the reason why she got a divorce by her own admission. Because she had roast beef in her pants? Yeah. She put roast beef in her pants. That's what you're trying to say here. You're literally saying she put Arby's in her pants. I'm saying she literally, it's so ridiculous. I'm saying she literally put Arby's in her pants. Yes. Objection, relevancy. And you go, you're making a slur about her. No. You're literally saying she put Arby's in her pants. Is that right? Yes, that's correct. Why are you laughing? Because it's just so funny. What is your basis for saying she put Arby's in her pants? I just think it's funny. I just think it's so funny. What is your basis for saying she puts Arby's in her pants? It, Loomer, she carries roast beef in her pockets.
This is the world the anti-woke comedians are freaked out about. Like they're gonna ask me about my jokes in court. That is the actual world.
And Brian, like you can tell they're like, well, like the attorney is like, why are you laughing? And you can tell her like how hard it is for her to have to stay there and be like, because it's funny. Because I think it's so funny.
It is funny, by the way, to say somebody carries roast beef in their pockets as a cover for saying their pussy looks like roast beef.
Yeah. And it says, what is your basis for saying she puts roast beef in her pockets and in her pants? Objection, relevancy, harassment. Loomer's response, because I know she likes roast beef. So what is your basis for saying she had Arby's in her pants? Because I know she likes to eat at Arby's. It goes on like this for like pages and pages.
Has the Arby's Twitter account commented on
it? This is gold right here.
Yeah. Marjorie Taylor Greene on the sign of the fucking Arby's outside holding a sandwich.
There's another exchange here where it says, at one point, Bulger attempted to get Loomer to admit she was talking about Harris's vagina, speaking of Kamala Harris, when she tweeted that Harris had an infested snatch. But Loomer refused, causing Bulger to blow up on her. Bulger, you wrote a sentence saying she had an infested snatch. What is your basis? I don't know what I was referring to, honestly. I could be referring to Kamala Harris herself. What? Of course you're talking about Kamala Harris. Yeah, I'm talking about Kamala Harris herself. You're talking about her body. You're talking about her vagina. No, I'm just talking about Kamala Harris. Well, a snatch is a vagina, isn't it? Loomer, it's up for interpretation.
Yeah, it is, actually.
Sure. Yeah, that's up for interpretation.
Could be stealing, but which makes perfect sense in this sense.
Yeah. And, like, this is hilarious. And, like, sort of the frame of the story is about how she's, like, saying that Bill Maher, alleging that she might be having sex with the president, cost her a job at the White House, which in turn cost her all the jobs that come after being in the White House, like, you know, Jen Psaki or Jean-Pierre, like the sort of TV and speaking gigs that they're feted with. And Loomer thinks she's being robbed from this, and that's what's led to the Arby's deposition. But, like, I'd like to bring up this story in the context of what Laura Loomer did just this week, which was basically get the Trump administration to cancel the visas of children who have had their limbs blown off in Gaza, who were like given visas to come to America to get rehab, therapy, and prosthetic limbs fitted for them. Like, and by the way, paid for by, like, not the U.S. government, paid for by private donors who, like, are, you know, sought visas for these children who have gotten their, you know, killed or, you know, crippled for life by American munitions to come to this country and get prosthetic limbs fitted and, like, get therapy for, like, how to get used to using them or, like, regaining some mobility. And it's just like, yes, it is funny to hear Loomer talk about how a snatch isn't a pussy and she believes Marjorie Taylor Greene literally keeps roast beef in her pockets. But, like, this is a person who, like I said, is just basically, like, whether she's in the White House or not, created, you know, like, the pretext to deny the visas for, like limbless children to get medical treatment in this country. And by the way, in the exact same week that the head of Israel's cybersecurity division was arrested for trying to rape a teenager in Las Vegas and then released without, you know, released and put on a flight back to Israel.
Jesus Christ.
Were you not aware of that story, Brian?
I was not aware of that story, but I will say, like, it does sort of, like, you start to look at who is actually has power now. Like, the podcast guys that got kind of duped or were used as, like, a propaganda wing, like, that, like, you look at who the idiot, like, this is the dumbest group of people we've ever had, at least in my lifetime. At least with Obama, there were guys that weren't like killed, like Tony Hinchcliffe. What wouldn't have been involved in any of the decision making, you know?
Yeah.
He wouldn't be helping, you know. And it bums you out when you see somebody stupid like fucking Laura Loomer has some amount of power in the government. Is it's the same thing with the Doge,
big balls.
Elon Musk thing. Yeah, it just fucking is like, Jesus Christ, man. Like, nobody's looking at it and saying, like, oh, I think we have some real stupid fucking people running around making rules right now.
And I guess it's just like, it's the contrast to, like, Marco Rubio pulled the visas of these, like, crippled children under the pretext that, like, we don't know that, like, maybe their parents are a threat to the United States. Because I guess, like, even he couldn't bring himself to say that, like, a 7-year-old girl missing her legs was a imminent threat to the security of the United States. But, like I said, the contrast with the Israeli cybersecurity guy who was literally, like, busted in a classic, like, Chris Hansen sting operation where he was soliciting a 15-year-old girl to meet him for sex in Las Vegas and was, like, but, you know, like, and I think it might have been some sort of, like, group sex scenario with a bunch of other child predators. But, like, he was arrested and then basically released on $10,000 bail after being debriefed by the FBI and Department of Homeland Security. And apparently during which he said, I have to make my flight back to Israel. And he was, like, released and is indeed in Israel right now. He has a court date August 27th in Nevada. I'm sure he'll be back for that.
That's right. He's going to be able to make that.
Yeah.
The U.S. attorney for Nevada, which Trump kind of, like, rammed her through too. He seemed to take like special interest in installing her. Sigal Chitai. I don't know how to pronounce her name, but this is an Israeli citizen. She was born in Israel and probably handpicked by Miriam, I would assume, if she's the U.S. attorney.
Nevada.
Attorney for Nevada. Yeah.
I mean, like, again, like the Israeli cybersecurity guy. I mean, like, this story is like, it's too fucking on the nose. And I said, like, ghoulish on its face about, like, how I don't know, like, just the fealty that every level of our government pays to the state of Israel and, like, how they are allowed to get away with literally any crime, be it genocide or child predation in this country. But, like, contrast that with the idea that, like I said, like, children who have been crippled for life by American bombs are now a threat to America. And not just that, like, not just bad enough that we, like, we did that to them to begin with, but now that we, like, we're blocking the ability for them to, like, get treatment or be fitted for prosthetic limbs because under the guise that they are a threat to the United States is, like, I don't know. If only there was a term to describe what type of government would do that.
It is weird to, like, it's weird to imagine a normal person that sits in their house, they don't read about this stuff, and wonder what like a just a regular normal guy thinks about like if we're evil. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I can't imagine. I mean, even like a liberal type person who just like kind of knows what's going on in the news, I would think they think we are fundamentally good people. And it's like, I think we're bad, man. I think we're really bad people. I see it. And you just, cause you see, like I said, you can watch like the worst stuff in the world happen to people around you. But if you don't know like a trans person, you don't look at Palestine, then you're just like, oh yeah, I mean, no, ah, oh, dang it, we got a Republican president. But I was like, this one's bad. I think this one is the one you got to look at and say like, if he goes for a third, he could go for a third term. It's possible. It's not like he might not win, but it just, everything feels like it's on the table now in a way that it didn't feel before.
Like, you know, I think about that with like the occupation of Washington, D.C. right now, and like and Trump's promise that he's going to roll out this to like New York and Chicago too, or just like any major city that like has a Democratic mayor or like a like, you know, is largely associated with being like a liberal stronghold. You know, like Felix, you brought up this point, but like in Loomer's statements about like the supposed threat posed by these maimed children, she was just like, I didn't know America was the only place in the world that had hospitals. And it's just like, you quite rightly pointed out, like, are you the best judge of what is a necessary medical procedure, Laura?
Yeah, I've been struggling to like figure out anything else to say about like this entire thing, partly because it's just on the face, like so gross, just so every aspect of it is so disgusting. Like this repulsive looking woman who has like gotten her jaw shaved and added to and done all this stuff to her, and like, you know, eats dog food on her podcast where she accuses random Muslims of terrorism, that she was behind this. But it's interesting in the way that it does. It speaks to this larger idea of Trumpism, which is the implicit idea that, like, you know, we may maim people, we may be the single greatest cause for all suffering in the world, but, like, you know, we let people come here for surgery because we have the best, you know, X or Y clinic in the world. It feels like there's been a comprehensive effort to, like, get rid of that.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, yeah.
Like
this idea that like even among conservatives where they're like, they may think that it's like overstated how racist the country America is or how evil our history is. And they're like, you know, there's a lot to be proud of in this country too. But it used to be like the standard cant was that like America is the greatest country on earth because like we have the most freedoms and that like so many people from around the world want to come and like live here and work here because we're like, you know, a stable, free society that welcomes everyone. And like the current MAGA iteration is like, trying to do away with that entirely. They're just like, no.
I mean,
like, America's a white country for white people only.
I mean, we can't have universal health care because the science, you know, that's their reason. It's like, we have the most advanced health care in the world because we don't have universal health care. And now they're just like, we have some of the worst in the world. It's like, well, could we fix that? Like, is there anything you could do?
Yeah, no. No, fuck you is the answer to all of that. But like, no, but hey, we're bringing Uncle Herschel back to Cracker Barrel. You like that, you fucking pigs. You'll eat that slop right up.
It's crazy. I haven't been over there in a while, and I've talked about it a few times. Like my in-laws who live in a chicken coop and shit in a bucket for like, and they're like in their 70s. You know what I mean? They're like prepping for the end of the world, and it's like
don't bother at that point.
I know.
You're like,
know.
Oh, fuck it. I'm just trying to be comfortable in my sunset golden years.
Yeah,
I'm trying to fucking like shit in an outhouse on the off chance that civilization collapses in the next, I don't know, couple years I have left.
Well, they're also flying like the Trump as Rambo flag outside of their chicken coop. You know what I mean? And you're just like, so everything's fucked and everything sucks, but it's not. They always find a way. Because I think you guys have always been good at articulating this. No matter who's in power, they're going to figure out a way that it's the Democrats' fault. If my in-laws get some of their stuff cut, and if everything's more expensive, it's not going to be Trump's fault. It will never be that. There's never a world in which they will interrogate any of that stuff. And that's the thing that I find, like, because if you guys remember Bill Clinton and George W. Bush at the end of their terms were like insanely unpopular. Or no, Bill Clinton was popular, but George W. Bush was like insanely unpopular.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were saying basically when you get to the end of your second term, you end up being more unpopular. Like people just blame more stuff on you. And I've been seriously wondering, like, what is going to happen at the end of this term? Are those people going to say, fuck, man, everything's more expensive and everything fucking sucks, and I think it's his fault?
I mean, I kind of think that he's going to have, like, I don't know, that, like, 20 to 30% that, like, you know, George W. Bush had, yes. Where there's just, yeah, like, there's enough of a slice of this country that it's just, they're going to go along with anything. But I don't know. So something like half of the people that voted for him will just like permanently check out from politics. That's, yeah, possible. I don't know. Yeah.
I don't think
the people that voted for him, like, especially like this time, would like necessarily have the level of self-insight to go, Okay, well, it turns out that he was president before and there were warning signs that he may have done some of this. And they'll just go, well, that just shows that that it's impossible to change the system.
Well, and that's
so I'm only going to vote for contestants on Chopped or, like, you know, the fattest child in America, whatever show
the
popular
Rizzler.
In 2028.
I don't think he could win a third term. I absolutely think that that's like a third rail, that like they float it and maybe people will carry MAGA flags that say Trump 2028. I don't think that can happen. I think because the one thing we're taught as kids in American public school is that, like, no, they should only get two terms because then that leads to bad stuff. I do not think he could win, but I do think, you know, there's a good chance his stupid fucking son, like Donald Trump Jr. or like JD Vance, I still think they can win. I just feel like, and I don't know if maybe this is just like doom, my inner like doom hitting, but I do think that like those people are always going to vote for the worst guy. Like that's what they want. They want the worst possible guy because they love that he makes people like us angry. Like that's where they get their joy in politics. They will vote for James Woods or something like that.
Well, I mean, like, if anything, it's like, you know, I don't say it's admirable, but there is a kind of logic to it that, like, if everybody instinctively understands that, like, politics can no longer, if it ever had the ability to, like, respond to the material concerns of like normal, regular people in this country and like do something for them that will make their life easier or more free or less stressful or less financially ruinous to like lose your job or healthcare or something like that, that's gone. But like what politics can do is inflict cruelty on other people that you don't like. And I don't know, like I think the libs are trying to sort of like gin something like that up going into the next presidential election. I'd like, you know, like directly antagonizing MAGA people or just trying to like wind them up or something. I don't know. I'd be interested to see where it goes. I want to see like more culture war stuff, but from the libs.
I do
too. You know,
I'm with you. I would love to see them stop goofing around and like saying, like doing corny jokes and just going straight up after them. You know, like I feel like there's a world in which you could convince those people that the danger is much closer than they think it is. And that maybe they should take it seriously instead of just being like Trump has sex with Putin. You know what I
mean? Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, we're working on amending the U.S. Constitution. So that to be a starting quarterback in the NFL, you have to be trans.
Yes, something, anything. Like just yeah. Say it. Like J.B. Pritzker had that. He has like a trans legal defense hotline now in Chicago. I saw, and it was just like, I mean, that is a guy. I don't know shit about him, but I know a lot of people really like him. A lot of people on the left really like him. But everything I see from him, I'm like, this is like how you deal with this sort of thing. You have to like be upfront and you have to like say, I'm with these people. You know what I mean? Like, you can't make these calculations in your mind. Where did you see today the list of words?
Oh, yes.
I just saw this, like,
Ryan, that's so funny. This is third way. They like, quote unquote, this was a scoop that was like leaked, you know, like, oh, we got a leak from third way, which is this, obviously they leaked it themselves because they're very proud of it. Yeah. But like, it was third way released a list of words that they're now proscribing from like any Democratic candidate for office or office holder from using. And they're all words like unhoused people, imprisoned person, patriarchy, hierarchy, violence in terms of emotional or environmental violence, shit like that. And what I thought was so funny about that is like, the only people who talk like that are the candidates that you fund to run for office.
Nobody talks like that. This was a 2015 type of like politics. You know what I mean? And like, some of the words are really funny. It's like person who immigrated.
Yeah.
Like, why can't you say, I don't understand why you can't, like, I understand, I think, what they're getting at, as in, like, don't talk like an academic.
Don't talk like an asshole. Like, just talk like a normal person, you know? Because, like, somebody, okay, here are the blacklisted terms. Privilege, violence, dialoguing, triggering, othering, microaggression, holding space, body shaming, subverting norms, system of oppression, cultural appropriation, and my favorite, Overton window. That's sort of my favorite one. And I gotta say, I have to agree with the third way. It's funny, like, I agree that all these terms, like, you know, land like fucking lead balloons whenever you see someone like speaking in public trying to like, you know, speak in this stilted fucking like weird academic way of talking. My favorite is when politicians started using the phrase Overton window.
Yeah, I don't think, I think that there, I mean, I even feel like there may be some utility for some of these words. Like, this isn't about, this is like how people talk at college, and that's fine. You can, like, that's like how academics talk about these things in college. It doesn't actually work in like public. And I think we moved past it so long ago. Now, Overton window is very funny, because it means something. Like, it's a thing that exists, and you can, it's a useful term that I think people understand. So there's like all these words. I just don't understand like who they're telling to stop doing this. I have never heard a Democratic politician say like stakeholders as a negative, I guess. Like, that's a really weird one that they have in there. But yeah. You don't even hear people talk like this anymore. This was so a long time ago. And it's just the way that academics talk to each other. It's not the way they talk, like politicians talk to us.
Well, I was going to say, like, I mean, if I have heard these terms being used, I'm fairly certain the only context I heard them being talked about was by like a DLC or a third way backed Democrat who was like talking about unhoused people, or, you know, that Trump represents an existential threat to the norms and hierarchies of democracy or some bullshit like that.
Right. This is not something that, like, a leftist... this is not something that a rank leftist... Like, just a regular person that has left politics. These aren't... I mean, a few of these are things. Like, cisgender... Like, I think that there are a few of these that are like, yeah. But I don't think... I don't hear any... And I probably know more leftists than most people. I don't hear like birthing person or like food insecurity. Like, I don't hear these words, because food insecurity is a fucking bad problem that we should be talking about.
Yeah.
It feels like they don't want us to, and you know, they've been doing this since the election. They just don't want us talking about material needs. They want us to talk about whatever weird thing that they're like, they want us to be more conservative so that we don't have to be uncomfortable.
Well, yeah, they want the language to be like this, you know, weird inclusive jargon, but like, they want that as a cover for the fact that all of their policies are like, are a product of the Overton window being shifted dramatically to the right in our lifetimes.
Yeah, that list is so fucking funny to me. I just
one of my favorites here is incarcerated people.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, felons, prisoners, you know.
Say jail guy.
You know, I think we should replace all these terms with like sort of old timey terms. Like instead of saying prison, say the hoose cow.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're being sent up the river.
A politician saying, we have people in the can that didn't do anything wrong.
One last story here. This is about, Felix, you were talking about how, like this shift away from, like, even old conservative ideals about why America is a good country into, like, I was thinking of Jackie Robinson being taken off the Arlington Cemetery website. And there's a story this week about how Trump is mad at the Smithsonian Museum in D.C. because, quote, there's too much focus on how slavery was bad. And I feel like in a different era, like the line was, there's too much, the kids are being taught too much in American history about how slavery was, you know, a terrible thing, which it was, but there's just too much focus on it. I think we're about a couple weeks. I mean, like they're inching up closer and closer to it, but like, I don't think that like they're mad so much that there's focus on how slavery was a part of American history and that's bad. They want the exhibits to be about how slavery was good. Like, I think that's where they're inching up to. And to that end, there's an article here this week about basically a new intentional community in rural Arkansas that we're going to be calling Graper Rhodesia. And this is an attempt of a group of sort of like online gripers, for lack of a better word, to create a whites-only community in rural Arkansas, which I think is a little bit redundant. They could just move to rural Arkansas. I don't think they need to give a name or brand the community.
It's really something that you can read this and know that it's just a guy ripping people off. You know what I mean? Like, you can read the article and it's like, he's all crowdfunding on Give, Send, Go. And then the real important part is that the guy that's doing it doesn't live there because it's probably a fucking shanty town without plumbing or anything.
Yeah. It says, this is from Wired. It says, video footage shared by the group on its social media accounts show a bucolic setting with animals and children running around their 160-acre site, while members of the community build timber frame homes, churches, and other facilities. A, quote, few dozen people are already living there full time, says Eric Orwall, the group's president. Though the organization claims that return to the land is nothing more than a peaceful settlement of like-minded people, online histories of the group's leaders tell a different story. Members have espoused virulently racist and anti-Semitic views and repeatedly praised Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party. One of the leaders says he is currently under criminal investigation in Ecuador. It says, in 2023, a group of Orwell's followers decided to buy a 160-acre plot in rural Arkansas. They chose the location because Orwell lives nearby. The property was relatively cheap and the building regulations were lenient. The county is over 90% white, which was also a deciding factor, says Orwell, who claims to be a classically trained musician who previously played with Shen Yun, a Chinese performing arts group run by the Falun Gong.
I did see that. I think my line in this thing is while the Fair Housing Act of 1968 prevents housing discrimination based on race or religion, Orwell believes that the structure of his group as a private member association will help him to circumvent the law. And then the next line is just, the group has raised over $63,000 from supporter for what it calls legal framework research. I mean, every time I see one of these now, I just go looking for the give, send, go that some guy is going to walk away with $150,000 while people are living in their own shit.
I've sold racist monorails to Ogdenville, North Haven. Can it put them on the map? By gum.
It is crazy that those guys, the type of marks a lot of these people, especially the like real far right, you would think that they would be hyper aware because of the amount of times that they get scammed. But no, they fucking love getting scammed. It's like their favorite thing.
This is my favorite piece of the part of the article. The application form for a return to the land asks potential members to outline their ancestry and also respond to a range of questions about their social and cultural viewpoints, including whether they support foreign immigration, transgenderism, COVID-19 vaccines, and segregation. It also asks, how often do you think about the Roman Empire? With answers ranging from every day, at least once, to a few times a week, probably, and never. The initial process only gets you approved to access private group chats on Telegram. For those who decide they want to move to Arkansas and become part of the community, vetting for that level of involvement is much more thorough, says Orwal, though he declined to say what the process involved be around conducting a background check. No, the process involves taking potential applicants, holding them up by their ankles and shaking out their pockets so that you can buy another fucking chicken coop.
It's so funny. I mean, it is just... they are so easy to get money out of. It blows your mind that, like, the president sells hats and they just buy them and wear them around. And I saw, like, so many. I went to the airport. I went to the Asheville a couple weeks ago. Was hanging out down there, and at the airport, there were so many guys in Trump hats, just so proud of themselves. And I was kind of shocked by it a little bit because I don't see it because I don't live among. I never see a Trump thing in my neighborhood, probably like you guys.
Yeah, so, no, me neither.
Yeah, me neither. But when you see it, you're like, they're always so proud of it. Feels weird. You look at him and you're like, you know, that guy's really proud that he woke up today and put on that hat before he left the house.
So some more details about the founding of this intentional community. This is about Mr. Orwal and his wife. It says, the pair met in music school. Like Mr. Orwal, Ms. Smith, 31, who is originally from upstate New York, plays the French horn. Before they had four children, the pair made live sex videos for money on the porn site Chatterbait. When I was doing that, I was a moral nihilist. I was not yet a Christian, Mr. Orwal said of the videos. I had a different worldview and value system, and part of my rationale for going toward more traditional values was seeing the mistakes I made when I did not have to make them as a young person. I think when he says here, I had different values back then, I think he just decided no one was paying enough money for him and his wife's gross sex tapes.
Well, let me tell you, it doesn't mean that he was doing porno, because my co-host hosted a podcast on Chatterbait for a period of time about bar rescue. So there's also that.
I like this detail too. On a post on X last year, Orwal wrote, that what really matters isn't which biological race you belong to or what your ethnic background is. What matters is what proportion of admixture you have from the ancient and spiritually superior root races. In a follow-up, he said, anyone who disagrees with this statement needs some Anarabe teaching. Were any of you guys familiar with what Anarabe is?
I was very, like, confused by that one. I didn't, like you, I didn't even,
there was only one race of people in the group, the Roots, I thought. Was there a white member?
I think there was a white member at one point in the Roots, just around the back. Yeah, all right. I says honor, it's A-H-N-E, Anarabe was a pseudoscientific organization created by Heinrich Himmler, the head of the SS in Adolf Hitler's Nazi Germany. The group consisted of scientists and academics charged with proving that Germans descended from an Aryan race that was responsible for most of the world's greatest achievements in everything from agriculture to art and literature. When asked about his recent comments regarding the arrival of a second Hitler, Orwell said that the Nazi party leader was, quote, a very controversial historical figure. Felix, this is from the SS Santa Claus hunting division, right?
Yeah, I guess that was sort of Himmler's department.
But like, if someone says they admire Adolf Hitler, like, you know, you can be like, all right, wide berth. You know, I guess, I don't know, they want attention or something.
I will say that every moron I grew up with.
Yeah, but when someone, okay, yeah, exactly, because it's a stupid guy thing to say.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
You're like, you know, he was a great military leader, you know, yes. Like, hey, like, he wasn't all bad. But when someone says they admire and pattern their life after Heinrich Himmler, you are in the territory of a true sicko. Like someone truly evil who's not just being stupid.
Yeah.
But like, it's a, you know, he's deep in the bag.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even knowing like, he's read so much Nazi stuff that he knows words that I've never even heard.
Yeah, I don't even know how to pronounce. Yeah.
With like some of the right wings, like I understand like admiring Mishima, right? Because he was like a great writer.
He's a good writer.
And
yeah.
Like, yeah, and he like, he did like, he yeah, went
he
out
himself,
like, he said he would.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Himmler tried to like defect to America and then like tried to hide his identity. He was like, oh, I'm a farmer. I'm a farmer who wears these gay little glasses and then like killed himself in sheer terror. Like at least Hitler like got a girlfriend and then killed himself. And
he got a girlfriend and he had a dog. All right. He was living the dream.
But like Himmler like really did like go out like a coward. And yep. him and Hitler were not on good terms when it ended. I don't know, just, like, idolizing, that is, all of this stuff is just, like, meant to shock people, but that especially, if you were really into, like, the Third Reich, if you were really, like, we're getting the band back together, Himmler would not be your guy. He was locker room cancer.
Well, speaking of trying to shock people, when the New York Times wrote this up, they did a profile on Mr. Orwell, and it said, Mr. Orwell recently gave the New York Times a limited tour, allowing entry to the property through a gate that had a lock. He sat on a folding chair in his office, housed in an insulated shed with air conditioning and fiber internet, two pianos, and shelves full of philosophy texts. Before a photographer could snap a picture, he pulled the copy of Mein Kampf from a bookshelf and turned it around to hide its spine.
Oh, what a pussy.
Like, come on. Like, who? Like, come on. Like, just stand on business or don't fucking say anything at all. Like,
it's an interesting book. It's like he's an interesting guy. He had a lot of charisma. Like, was what all the idiots, you know, all the dumbest guys
you know,
in the
like,
world
say. You know, when people say that, and then you see videos of Hitler giving a speech or talking, I'm like, I don't know what they're, I don't know what they're referring to. It's like not like he's handsome or funny or
they just like
intelligent
really,
or anything. Like he just
they like
he was like he was geeked up on amphetamines. Was mostly what the charisma was talking about.
They like politicians to yell at them. Is
okay,
exactly
yeah, yeah. Okay,
what
he did yell at people a lot.
Yeah, true. They love that.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, like, best of luck to return to the land and everyone who's invested heavily in that community. Go back to making chatterbait videos, please. I just love that, like he said, I did that when I was a moral nihilist. And it's just like, we all know you didn't make any money from that shit.
If people
were fucking going deep into their pockets to see you ball your French horn playing wife, you wouldn't be on this Nazi shit right now. Come on, brother.
That is true.
All right. Well, I think that does it for today's episode. Brian, thanks for hanging out. Want to give us a little, what's going on in the guys universe right now?
I do have to say something to Felix real quick. Have you been able to keep up with Bubba the Love Sponge being on top again?
No.
He, 1 month before, said Hulk Hogan's on his deathbed. And everybody said, no, he's not. And then Hulk
All
Hogan
you have to
died.
Do is be right once.
Yeah. Oh, and then if you go to his YouTube, it's all Hulk Hogan talk. Still, to this day, he's now saying he thinks somebody murdered him.
Yeah. He was a danger to the powers that be.
Yeah. So I do want to say that we always said that Bubba can never get back on top. Well, guess what? He's back, baby.
Is he getting views?
Yes, he is. He had Hulk Hogan's daughter on his show.
Oh, that's really depressing. That's really... Because I remember when Brooke Hogan tried to be like a normal celebrity.
Yeah.
This is how much higher standards were even in a stupid time like 2007 or 8. Even like idiot Americans then were like, you're just some famous buffoon's daughter. Like, go away. Now she would be like, they would be like, you know, like we need her to run for the Senate.
Yes.
Both parties tried to draft her. She was just too early. That's depressing to think about, like, her thought process as she's getting on Zoom with Bubba.
It is sad.
She's
it
like,
is.
Okay, it's gross to talk about this guy who, like, offered up his wife to my stupid dead buffoon dad. To think about
It's mind blowing, man.
But maybe a producer will see me on the Bubba the Love Sponge live stream.
It's Felix. It's the most radio thing that's happened in like 15 years. Like, he is doing what these guys do. Like, when you remember, like, sometimes they'd hit a wave, something would happen. Yeah. Opie would jump on a cake and they would just feel like the world was opening up to them, and he's there, and it's wonderful to watch. But yeah, we're just doing guys. We just had Tim Heidecker on to talk about Cigar Guys, and
oh hell yeah.
Branson's going to be on next week talking about Barefoot Feet Guys PG. So if you listen to Feet Guys the first time we did with Mike, that was the rated R.
The Mike one, I'm sure he's got quite a few images.
It's so funny. I'll tell you what's funny about that is, like, there's two episodes that, like, legitimately bothered people, and the show's always been dirty from day one, but man, Fart Guys and Feet Guys just really bothered people quite a bit. So don't listen to that one.
So Brent is going to come on to talk about the PG Feet Guys, the guys who just like being barefoot and like going shopping, yeah, like that. Not
foot lawyers
thing. Yeah,
guys that come up with reasons that they should be like guys. So on a there's a few posts from guys that are like, well, I went to an arena to see a concert and they told me I had to put my shoes on, but I pulled up their dress code and it says footwear, and I have a ankle bracelet on, so I should be on because that's footwear.
Brian, I don't know if you're aware of this, but I believe the New England Patriots currently have a player that they just drafted who's a barefoot guy, and like he shows up to games barefoot, and he was recently interviewed about it, and he said he was doing it to, quote, combat the pussification of America. And he was like, bro, I'll do something hard for once. I just wanted to commit to doing something hard. So like, yeah, like he shows up like in the parking lot of games barefoot.
But yeah,
I don't know how that'll work in Buffalo in fucking January.
I can't wait to see it. They do walk out there in the cold. They don't mind.
Yeah.
But yeah, and recently talked about, I think one of my favorite episodes we've done recently was with Tom Sharpling. We talked about Metallica guys, which me and Chris have gotten kind of obsessed with Metallica interviews because they're the weirdest guys on the fucking planet. They're so weird that you like, I can't believe how weird like Lars is with his big veneers. Cause that's my other obsession right now is heavy metal guys with plastic surgery. It's fucking, a guy saw Metallica with my brother. I went with him. And I was in an outdoor stadium, and I could see Lars's big fucking teeth.
His big, like,
in the back,
like Jim Carrey, the mask. Yeah. He's got teeth like that.
Yeah, back at the drum set, and you could see it. He's behind everybody, and I was like, God damn, look at those teeth. So, yeah, it's just guys. You can search. I think it comes up if you just type guys on a podcast app now.
Well, the link will be in the episode description. Once again, Brian Quimby, thank you so much for hanging out with us today. Oh, always a joy and a pleasure.
Thank you, Brian.
All right. Chris, do you have any business to attend to at the end of the show?
I stand on business.
No, we are blessedly free of any kind of announcements right
all
now.
All right. So. 10 toes down. Keep standing on business. Never wear shoes. And consider moving to the whites-only Chaz community in rural Arkansas if you're hoping to get dysentery sometime soon.
Will, I want to get a hold of you. I want to do New York guys.
Oh, I would love to do New York guys.
I have two concepts that are very crazy.
I am one myself, yeah.
Yeah, I have two New York guys, and then my other concept is American guys, but they all have to be from outside of America. Yeah, well, I'll get a hold of you about New York guys.
Like
really
British guys who wear cowboy hats and shit?
Oh, yeah, like Canadian guys that wear MAGA hats.
Right.
Like, just the really embarrassing, like the really like cucked stuff, you know. Yeah. Well, thanks for having me again, guys.
All right, thanks again, Brian. Until next time, everybody. Bye-bye.
Well, what I mean, farmer, is how do I get to Little Rock? Little Rock? I don't know about no Little Rock, but there's a whopper down in my Spring Branch. Farmer, I say, your corn looks mighty yellow and bad. Yep, we planted the yeller kind. Oh, farmer, How'd your taters turn out this year?